watching the games over the weekend, and I saw the Leafs get one shot in the third period. It was a weak shot, too, but I remember.
And they scored.
Yeah. We got one shot. And then I started to think about Emile Francis. Emile Francis came into the Boston Gardens. He saw us play. I think he was a GM of the St. Louis at the time. And he saw us play somebody. I think it was Minnesota somebody. And they got 11 shots on net. And he went in the paper the next day and he said, that's a disgrace. The team that came into the Boston Gardens. Now, we had big wingers. And we had a small arena, if you remember. And it was tough getting a lot of shots. If I ever won a game and I got really outshot, I'd be upset. But anyhow, he made it in the paper. He says, you know, that's a disgrace coming in here and just having 11 shots on net and putting a show on like that. And that's good. He come in and I think he had 10 shots. His team come in and had 10 shots. But that's the way we used to look at it.
Wasn't there a story one time you said of a guy, one team had one shot on net, they were in the dressing room?
Oh, that was Philadelphia when they had the Broad Street Bullies. They were playing Colorado. And they used to, teams were afraid to go in to play.
You get the Philly flu, right?
They had the Philly flu, yeah. And they're like a wolf pack. They go after you. So anyhow, they're up in the room. They're listening. And the shots are Philadelphia 15 and Colorado 1. And you can hear it. And the one guy says, all right, who is the wise guy?
Wasn't the shot clock always an issue in the Boston Gardens with you and your goalies?
You know, it wasn't the goalies, it was Phil. Oh. I used to stand behind Phil. I don't know how I ever got behind him all the time. And see, he never gave us a shot there. See, Phil was more worried about the shots on net than he was the score. See, he never gave us a shot there. So I went to Harry, you know, this is my first year. A monkey could have been behind the net. I was so brutal. And anyway, I said, look, you either have to do something with that shot clock. And they had a shot clock on the wall. It was just the shots. And everybody was looking. And we had pretty good fans in Boston. The gallery gods and all that were pretty good. But when we'd get, we'd get outshot, and very seldom we got outshot, hey, we got a shot on net. I said, Harry, you either get that shot clock taken down, or I'm going to rip it off. I swear to you, during the game, I'm going to go up and going to rip it off the wall. Well, Harry, I got to admit, he's a good GM. He did it. And we never bothered with shots after that. But you can make your goalie look bad if you don't have a good guy keeping track of the shots. And you say, well, how can he do that? All you have to do is 2-on-1. If you have a guy that is not good on shots, you can make your goalie look bad. And believe me, Jilly Gilbert, I remember one game we got put out. I'll never forget this as long as I live. I never forgot this one. As we outshot the team 50-something, 52 to 18, and they went to, and we lost.
It was in Chicago, and it was in Boston. It was a
with Chicago, yeah.
Against Chicago, and it was the first round of the playoffs, and it was best 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
And so it was 1-1, and then...
And when I used to be on Hockey Night in Canada, I used to go paranoid that first... I still get the shivers thinking of the first time. We outshot him 52 to 18, and he said, yes, but out of that 18, there was a lot of hard shots. You know, I have a theory on the refs. You know, and I started to think back when I coached, when I saw that penalty on Richie with Anaheim. And I'm not saying the Leafs are divers. They're not divers. They just fall down easy, that's all. I mean, but they're not divers. They don't go out and say, let's dive. They just kind of fall down easy. Richie pushed the guy. And if you remember, I don't know if you remember the play, and the guy fell over. And I thought, I wonder what he's going to call this. And he can't call it pushing. He can't call it
roughing
or something. He's got to call it something, and he called it tripping. And I looked in the book, and Anaheim, who used to have a reputation, a really tough reputation, that I don't know the exact thing, but remember I asked you about it.
Yeah, I think If you look at how many power plays they have and how many times they've had to kill a penalty, Anaheim has the worst, where they've had to kill like 30 more penalties than they have power plays.
Yeah, I don't think the referees sit down, have a coffee, or they're having a beer, and they say, oh, we're playing Philly and Flyers. Uh-oh, that's going to be a tough game. If you look over the weekend, I think they had 9 power plays, you know what I mean? And uh-oh, we got the Boston Bruins. They had the most fights last year. It's going to be a tough game. We better get ready. Start calling penalties. And then you have Montreal and Toronto. They know they're not. It's not going to be a rough game. There's going to be no fighting. There's going to be nothing. And I think they get it in their mind. Some of the penalties they call, it looks like they think, well, I got to call something. But I really believe I got in the referee's mind. And it used to be they had their names on the sweaters. I don't know why they took them off. They took them off for some reason. I forget what the reason was, but they took the names off. But I remember you talking about smart GMs. The smartest guy I ever, there's no question in my mind, Sammy Pollock, the GM of the Montreal Canadiens, was the smartest guy. He's the guy, as I'm rambling here, he's the guy that saw... He had L.A.'s first pick, and all of a sudden, L.A., and he wanted to get LaFleur. So what he did was he saw that L.A. started to, you know, win a few games, and, you know, they had to end up last for him to get LaFleur. And LaFleur was like
a phenom back then.
Phenom.
Yep.
So anyhow, it worked out that he sent Backstrom to help the other team to make sure that L.A. and he got L.A. But anyhow, let me tell you about a story of what he did. This is what he did. He knew Boston Bruins and Montreal were always in a dogfight for first spot, and they always ended up first. But anyhow, he went to the league. This is a true story. He went to the league. They were playing Washington, the worst team in the league. He had the game changed to the afternoon instead of that night, Saturday night. They played in the afternoon. They took a charter to Boston. They were in their beds watching us play the Atlanta Flames in Atlanta. So what happened was that we lost. I don't know even what happened.
Yeah, I think that was one of the games. There was a big fight.
Well, was that the game?
Yeah, I think it was one of the. There was a big brawl.
Yeah, it was a big brawl, and they're in bed watching. So we had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Harry wouldn't.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't get a charter. So we had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. We had to fly, and I remember it was awful weather. We had to land in Hartford, and then we had to get cars. Somehow we got cars to drive us back. And there's no sense of going home because we get home, we'd have to turn. So we went right to the Garden. And I remember I told the trainers, turn out the lights, the guys, some of them will sleep on the floor. Imagine, this is the National Hockey League. We slept on the floor. We were winning 2-1 with 5 minutes to go, and they tied it up. So, you know, they tied up. We should have won that game, and I loved those players. They were so great. So I'm walking. Honest to God, I remember walking with Red Fisher. Remember the writer for the Montreal Gazette? Great writer. He was a great writer. And he says, Grapes, that was a pretty good game. You guys kind of faltered at the end. And I said, yeah, you know, we faltered. And I said, that cheap Harry, I said, if he had got us a charter, we could have been back here, you know, and everything like that. So I never thought of it, you know, talking to Red. And I remember all the reporters left that little room there, and Harry was sitting across the table, and Red come walking in, and he said, hi, Harry. Hi, Don. How you doing? He says, you know, Grape Sarah says that you're so cheap you didn't get a charter. That's why they tied it up. I almost fainted. That was the first time I knew I was in deep trouble with Harry. And I remember, I can see Harry looking, geez, did I say that? And I couldn't start explaining because I said, yeah, I said it. And that started the whole thing of Harry and I, and we were down the drain. And from then on, when Red said that, when he walked in, I almost fainted. I remember I looked at Harry and Harry, because Harry, we were pretty good friends up until then. That was the last thing. But I got him back, Tim.
Yeah, well, you should say, Red, he just passed away a couple weeks ago.
He's a great guy, Red. He was, if I ever did a, column, I would be do it like Red Boy. He was terrific. He was there. He's the guy that said that he saw them all. Right from when he said that Bobby Orr was the best he ever saw. So anyhow, I got him back. You want to hear how I got him back?
Yeah, okay. You get him back.
All right. John Shannon was the head of Hockey Night in Canada.
How many years ago later was this?
Oh, it was about 10 years later. And Red used to go on Hockey Night in Canada. He was pretty good. He was like Al Strachan, satire, kind of mean in that. And he used to come on, and he used to like going on because, Hockey Night in Canada. So I remember we were watching the morning skate, and I was sitting with the rest of the guys up there and I was sitting with Red. And John Shannon, you had to be careful when he was the boss. He had a bad temper. So I said, hey, John. And John walked in front of us. And I said, hey, John, I said, Red is really mad at you. And he said, oh, and when John Shannon get mad, he bite the bottom of his, and I knew he was mad. He bite the bottom of his lip. And I knew he was mad. Because I said it in front of him. And he says, yeah, Red's mad. He said he doesn't get on long enough. He doesn't tell you, put him on, you get him off too fast. Did he say that? Never got on again. Took me 10 years, but I got back at him.
Well, you have a good memory when it comes to getting back at people. I remember one time we were at a meeting and with some people, and you sort of, this guy said hello, and you sort of brushed him off, which was sort of uncharacteristic of you to brush somebody off. So afterwards, I said, geez, Dad, I said, you weren't too nice to that guy. I said, what happened? He goes, well, I'll tell you. In 1953, I was walking through and you went on this long spiel about this guy. And I thought, boy, you sure do have a long memory when it comes to stuff.
Well, my dad always taught me, he says, never forget a friend and never forget an enemy.
And you hold that to a T, I'll tell you.
Well, I never forget a friend, though.
Yep, this is true.
Well, the other thing that happened this week, Dad, was I was watching a game in New York. I think the Leafs were playing. And they showed at the beginning of the game the Leafs walking up the ramp at Madison Square Gardens. And that ramp doesn't have very good memories for you. And I'll just set it up. It was a game on November 29th, 1975. It was the Bruins against the Rangers. You guys won 6-4. And Bobby Orr had a goal and an assist. He was playing with Brad Park. It was their 10th game that they had played together. And you pick it up from there.
I think we'd won 9 out of 10. We lost We lost the very first game. I never forget, we was in Vancouver, and we lost the first game. And Harry phoned me after the game, and he said, what happened? I said, Harry, I saw good things. I saw good things in this game, believe me. I said, we're going to be all right. He said, well, we better be all right because we both be gone if it isn't. And we won 9 out of 10. And I remember, if you remember the Leafs walking up this ramp, and it's a cobblestone ramp, and I don't know why they have a cobble. I guess if you drive cars and that up there, but you can't drive a bus up there. So, Bobby, I remember that game like it was, and he kept shooting, and John Davison was in the net. I remember in a great big glove, and John was a great big guy. And he kept making save after save. And I remember, Bobby, I remember this goal. He said, this goal, this shot is either going through you or in the net. And he shot it so hard that he knocked his great big glove. He knocked him back in the net and the glove come off. I never forgot it. So I'm down on the bus and I'm watching the guys come down. And Bobby comes on the bus and he's limping. And I thought, gee, I don't remember it. So I said to him, I said, I don't remember you getting hit. And he said, no, he says, walking down that ramp, he says, it seemed to hurt my knee. And if anybody has a bad knee, and some of the hockey players that have a bad knee, you can walk up and it's no problem. For some reason, walking down, it must grab the ligament or something like that. So the next game, is in Chicago, and I'm the last guy. I was always the last guy on the plane to make sure everybody got on and everything. And Carol Vadnai and I used to stand all the time. So anyhow, he got on, and as I got on, they were carrying Bobby off. Two guys were carrying Bobby. His leg had locked on him. I couldn't believe it. He called me the next day, and he said they'd operated. I says, what, did the doctor carry a knife around in his back pocket? And that was the end. And I believe that ramp, and I saw them walking up, had a bad ramp. I think that we took him to the seventh game. I said, if we took Montreal to the seventh game, if we had had Park and Orr, We would have won the Stanley Cup. Magic together.
Yeah, a few people asked that on Twitter and on the thing. Like, what were they like together when they're on the power play? Like, what were they like?
They were unbelievable. What happened was Park went on the left hand side, and he left, and Bobby was on the right because Bobby could pick the puck off the boards good. Better than Park, not much better, but I always felt sorry for Park because he was second best all the time, and he was dynamite too. And they're both left-hand shots, and they get the puck, and he put it over to Bobby, and he just sifted over there nice. Just it's like he threw it, and Bobby let that shot go, and we won 9 out of 10. I think I don't know if we'd ever lost another game with those guys. And that ramp, as you brought it up, as that ramp. Every time I look at it, I think of Bobby coming down and limping, and that was the end of him, because after he had the operation, nobody ever saw him after that. He went to Chicago
Well, he went to Chicago. You should tell the story of you were in the back room, and like the Bruins had the dressing room, and then there was the little stick room, and you were working on one of my sticks.
Oh, yeah.
And Paul Mooney came in, and Bobby was there.
Well, it was funny. I don't know. Bobby was at the far end of the dressing room. I'll never forget this. He was the far end of the dressing room.
Well, I should set it up a little bit. It was Bobby's last year on the contract, right? So they were setting. So they were in negotiations for the Bruins to sign Bobby.
Yeah, and if you know, but the hockey players that are injured will never come around. When the other teams are around, they'll come around after. And this, he was at the far end. He was doing pretty good. He was on the bike, and I was working on one of your sticks. How old were you then?
I would have been 12.
12. I was working. I took Ricky Middleton's best stick, and it was right-hand shot, and worked on it, and it was just perfect. Just perfect. So I'm working away, and I'm standing away, and I'm sitting at the far end, and Bobby's at the far end. We're not talking or anything. He's just working away on the bike, and I think about he was really going on the bike. Gads. Anyhow, I remember Paul Mooney come in, and Paul Mooney was the president of the team. And there was awful stuff going on in the paper that they wouldn't sign Bobby, and Bobby wouldn't sign, and it was all everything going on. And Alan Eagleson was his agent at the time. I remember this like it was yesterday. Mooney came in smoking a pipe. I never forget it. And he looked at me. He didn't like me very much, but he nodded to me. And so I just kept working on a stick. And I could hear him at the far end. And the conversation went like this. He says, Bobby, I just want to tell you what we're offering. He says, and I remember Bobby saying, I can't say the words, get away from me, Paul. Get away from me, Paul. You're trying to drive a wedge between Alan and I. He says, no, just let me tell you what we're offering you. No, get away from me. I don't even want to talk. You're trying to drive a wedge between Alan and I. And so he just I remember him walking out, and he was shaking his head like that. You know what he was going to offer him? Believe it or not, he was going to offer him 18% of the club. 18% of the club. If you had to just listen to him so I didn't say anything, and he just shook at me, and I said, Bobby, why don't you listen to him? No, he believed in Alan Eagleson so much, he wouldn't even listen. And he didn't listen, and right now Bobby would own 18% of the club, but he's doing all right. He's doing okay. He's big agent and all that stuff. But I remember Mooney walking out just shaking his head like that, and it was a sad day. And then he went to Chicago, and I remember we never got no conversation. I think compensation we never got. We never got anything from him. For the greatest hockey player in the world, we got no compensation.
I'm going to ask you a question. I know it's very anticlimactic after the Bobby Orr story, but do you remember what happened to that stick of Tim's that you worked on? How many hours did you work? And how do you work on a stick for hours? Like, what were you doing?
Well, I cut it off.
You whittled it down to the...
No, what happened is you have to have, and you know, I see some of the guys giving these kids, they buy the sticks and they're too big for their hands. I just had a shaved down and sanded down to the hands of Tim. Because I see some of the kids going out there now with great sticks, the big, big, tough guys.
It only makes sense that you put the stick to the size of the kid's hand.
Yeah, so I'm working away on it, and I had it all perfect, and Schmatzy the next day, he says, let me take a look at it, bent on it, and broke it.
Snapped it right in two.
And I looked at him, and I was like, And he really, and Schmatz, he really felt bad. He really needs to.
Because there's not too many things that Bobby Schmatz felt bad about, but he felt bad about this stick.
Oh, and listen, believe me, I worked so hard on that. But anyhow, that's when I knew Bobby Orr, when he was going to Chicago. Can you imagine he would have had 18% of the club. You know what that's worth now?
So, Dad, a couple of weeks ago, I was going through the internet and YouTube, and I saw a clip of just the end of a fight in practice between Jonathan Toews and Keith.
Yeah, I saw it. It wasn't much.
No, they didn't look like – they just got up and kept going on to the drill. It looked like nothing happened. So, like, you guys had a pretty tough team in Boston. So how did you handle
You know, I remember one game. I forget. It wasn't in the Boston Gardens. It was someplace – we were, I think, at Pittsburgh or something. And I remember two roommates and two guys could really throw them was Terry O'Reilly and Mike Milbury. And I'm at the one end. I never missed a practice. I could not miss a practice in the game. You know how I digress here, but I just tell you a story. Do you know that play that they have in the corner, one guy against the other, back and forth, and you try to get the puck on the other? I could never do that because if you cross-checked a guy too hard, you cross-checked one of our players too hard, like even a teammate. Be a fight. It was really
it's like pit bulls when they play and then they get a little too excited. Yeah, then you go, well, are they playing or are they still fighting?
I don't know. But we could go on and on about those. But anyhow, I go down and break it up. They were still going. You always break up the fight. You let it go a little while because you don't want to break it up too early I remember there was blood on the glass. Anyhow, and so you always broke up the fight. And the worst they ever had was a stick fight. Was Wayne Cashman. I forget who he was going with. But anyhow, I had to go in there. When I'd get in my arm, make it spark. But you always let it go a little bit. Because if you don't let it go a little bit, they'll still be mad at each other. But so you let a fight go a little bit, and then you break it up. But I remember when I played for Punch Imlach. Punch Imlach, the smartest guy I ever played for. And we were in Springfield. And Springfield had brought him up from the Quebec League to be the coach and everything in Springfield. And I don't know how I don't know what the situation was. I think he took over from Boston, bought the club or something for 1 year. And I remember it was another guy on our team called Tony Schneider. Tony Schneider was a great big guy. And I remember he had white hair. He was a young guy, but he always fought those guys with big heads. But anyhow, he had white hair. His hair was white. I don't know if it was white. You call it blonde. I guess he was so
platinum.
Blonde. Hey, was it?
Platinum.
Platinum. Anyhow, he looked good. He was a good-looking guy. And I don't know what happened, but him and I got fighting. So we're about halfway through the fight. It was a pretty good fight, I have to admit. We were throwing it pretty good. I thought Punch would jump in.
So and this is during practice.
This is during practice.
Well, what would he have to do to get you fighting? What?
I have no idea why we fought, but I thought, you know, somebody's going to jump in here pretty soon because he was a strong guy. And he just let us kept going and going and going. And I tell you, I was right near the end. If it had gone on another minute, I was going to faint. So we finally was finished, and I know he had to be as tired as... And he didn't break it up. We just exhausted. And I remember I go to the far blue line, and Brian Kilray, I remember Brian was on the same club. I was so weak, I couldn't pick up my gloves. He picked up my gloves and stick and put them on, and I'm handing my hands and arms were actually shaking. I was so tired. So Tony... I remember the boards were low in front of the. He was going in, and he reached up and he touched and he was cut. And Tony was must have been one of those guys when he saw his own blood, he went nuts. I tell you, he made it sound like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Gargantua, and he come running at me. I'll tell you, fear puts strength back in your arms again. And we went at it again, but nothing like the first one. We were so tired. And I never forgot that Punch let us go on. I always thought if I ever became, I never thought I'd ever become a coach, but if I ever did, I would break it up after three quarters because everything was fine and I was okay. But I never forgot Punch let us go on till we're absolutely exhausted.
Did the players, none of the players jumped in or anything?
No, and you know, you think the captain would have jumped in. I think he was afraid. No, I shouldn't say that. It was Harry Pedherny. I think he was the captain. I just stood there and they watched this. You think somebody, a friend of mine, would have broke it up or something, but I'll never forget that. But I said, if I ever become coach, or if I never, like
so
I said.
Like what? So, okay, so you guys end up, like, you're in the dressing
room. Yeah, that's what I'm going to ask. Like, what the dressing room, like, did you hold a grudge against each other?
No, it's funny you say that. I wasn't going to say it because it sounds like I'm blowing my own horn or something like that. But he, I don't know what, we were in the dressing room alone. I guess we left. We were in the dressing room alone. And I was facing, I was hanging up my, I had my eye on him. He was in the far end. It's funny, we didn't have the defense together. He was in the far end. And I could see him taking off his sweater. And I could see, and I'm keeping my eye on him. And I'm taking, I remember I was getting my elbow pads off and putting them up above. And he comes at me again. I said, oh, no.
Is this the same day of
the
fight?
It's the same, but just, we left. I guess we were cut up. We come, and he, we're in the room alone. And I looked, and it's, oh, here he comes again. I said, oh, I just can't go again. Yeah. I mean, I just can't. If he starts that again. And I remember him coming at me again out of the corner. I said, oh, well, got to go if he's going to go. And I remember he stuck out his hand and shook hands. And we never, but we were never friends after that. I usually, here's what happened. I could tell you another story. I was on the bus one time. Usually you become friends. I don't ask me why, but Tony and I were never friends for some reason. I was on a bus one time. This is a lot. This is when I was made a comeback, and I was reading the paper at the back, and two guys. Oh, I know what happened. I was thinking of what happened. This guy had a water pistol, and he was at the back of the bus, and the guy in the about four seats up, he'd take the water, and he hit the guy in the back of the head. And then when the guy looked back, you could never tell who he did. So every time the guy would look ahead, he'd give him the little shot with the, and then he'd look back again. So finally he figured out it was this guy. And he ran back and he grabbed the guy, and they actually fell in the corridor, the hall, and I'm reading the paper, and the buttons were, they had white shirts on, they were grabbing.
So they started fighting right on the bus.
They were punching one another. And I'm looking down.
And you're the coach.
No, I was just a player. Okay. I was making a comeback. I was like a seventh defenseman. And I'm reading the paper, and one of the guys at the front said, Graves, don't you think you should break those guys up? I said, let them fight. I said, they'll be kissing one another. And sure enough, they were best of buddies after that. But the bus is a lot of, someday we should go on.
Oh, there's a lot of good stories in the card games and about shuffling cards and making noise.
I never forgot that fight, though, that this guy, imagine sitting on a bus for 8 hours and
That would start to
annoy
you.
I don't think that's funny. That's a guy thing. I don't think that's funny.
Oh, I thought it was funny. So anyhow, so they had a fight. So how did we get into this? Oh, the fight. Now, usually what happens when you have a fight with the guy on the ice, you become the best of friends. Don't ask me why.
So it's a bonding thing.
Yeah, it's a bonding thing or something like that. But Tony and I were never friends. He was a single guy or something, and his friend was Jack Caffrey. You guys don't remember Jack Caffrey. Jack Caffrey was a pretty good pitcher too, but he hurt his knee, so he's back playing hockey. And the worst place in the world. Springfield, we must go and tell all the story about the Springfield Indians. We won three championships in a row, and nobody wanted to play there.
Well, getting back to the Bruins, and I one time I asked you, I mean, you had a lot of tough guys. There, you had, and crazy guys.
Toughest team ever in
sports.
Toughest
team, and the fighting on the ice and things like that. How did you control those guys? And what did you say? I remember you saying, well, you remember?
I'm nutsier than them.
They knew that you were nuttier than them, and that's the only way you kept them in line. And we were going to talk about you suspending players and all this.
No, I never suspended. No. I never suspended players. I never suspended a player, or I never fined a player and was coaching. If I didn't like them, I'd just get rid of them.
Well, this is it. I mean, people, and another thing that's unique, I remember you telling me the story about on practice about how if any of the Bruins or any of your players, if they came onto the ice late during practice, all the other players would bang their stick, right?
Bang, bang, bang,
so that you would have to pay attention that someone was late.
Well, you think I didn't know the guy?
Yeah, I know, but that's just the kind of guys they are. I mean, you think
were just kidding.
They were kidding, but they weren't kidding. And who, remember the first time Ricky Smith came and he was late for practice?
Ricky Smith, we'd picked him up from the WHA, And he, first practice.
With
the first place Boston Bruins. And we were a big club and everything. Anyhow, we were really smoking along. And so he's late. Can you imagine the very first practice he's late? And so it wasn't in the Boston Gardens. You had to go over. It was a big glass. I mean, you remember?
It was just down from the gardens, and it was a beautiful rink, and it was all glass, and you could see the water.
You could see the water
on the one side, and then the other side, it was like if you've been on Boston, it's hilly, and there was a great big hill that came down. Like it was from North Boston. It was a great big hill that came down.
Old North Church was up there.
Right.
So Ricky comes on, bang, 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 and he feels bad enough for his first practice and everything like that. So I remember we were doing break between the blue lines. I remember Rookie come up as I talk here. The word was break between the blue lines.
Which means you go fast between the blue lines.
Yeah, well, I hope so. Everybody knows that. And this rookie come up and he says, break what? No, I never have. So anyhow, so we're breaking between the blue lines. So I'm standing at center ice, and he comes up and he says, I never forget. And yeah, the guys have already done their little chat on the thing. And he says, I'm late. Yeah, okay. You're late. And he thought, because he come from the WHA and he come from other clubs, that he was going to get suspended or he was going to get fined or something like that. But I knew he was a good guy. There had to be a reason he was late. So so he kept saying, well, I'm late. Yeah, you're late. What do you want me to do? I said, well, why are you? So finally I said, why are you late? He said, well, I have, my car wouldn't start. So make conversation. I said, what kind of car you got? He says, a Renault. A Renault? I said, what are you, and I'm giving him a hard time.
It was a red one.
A red one too.
Yeah.
So this is the truth. This is hard to believe. This is the truth. The next time we're in that arena, I get on last, and I look up, and there's a red Renault wrapped around a thing. I says, "Ricky's done it again."
But he was wrapped around somebody else's car. Right,
but Dad, you go suspended, and
No, I never suspended.
No, you didn't suspend. You never even had a curfew for the players.
No, I didn't have a curfew, and one thing I did after the game, I used to say, bus leaves at 10 o'clock. That's you say that.
It was that
but
cold
the night before a game, I was a little paranoid overnight before a game because here's the way I felt about it. Guys that would drink, I didn't mind them going out, getting a little glow on, having two or three beers. But guys that would get drunk before a game, night before a game, didn't care about the club. And I would go a little paranoid. I only caught a couple of guys. I didn't try to catch anybody. By accident, I caught them. And I forget them. And I remember, I won't tell you about the one guy.
Yeah, you worked at not catching them coming in late.
Yeah. Well, one night I did. But anyhow, I caught them. I didn't mean to catch them, but we were pretty good. And I said, I don't want any trouble in the I don't want any trouble in the hotels. Because if there was troubles in the hotels, it's a reflection on me. But I never had any trouble except an exhibition game, a guy broke a window. But anyhow, the reason we had such good camaraderie is that I would never suspend a player or I would never find a player. They knew it. If I didn't like them, I got rid of them.
Okay, thanks everybody for listening. Yeah. We're our next podcast coming up on Thursday. We're going to talk about Dad's Become a Movie Critic. We're going to talk about the movie 1917.
Oh, that was a great movie.
And your boyhood hero, Kenny Reardon.
Hero of heroes. I went to bed every night looking at his picture and said, I just want to be like Kenny Reardon. And I'll tell you all about it
and
Thursday.
And we have a clip of Kenny and he talks about his feud with
Cal Gardner,
which is something. So anyway, thanks for listening, folks. And we'll drop in again and have a listen on Thursday.